All right, take it away.
Okay, am I? Hey, are
You are
we
live.
live? Are we?
Yes, you are
Yeah.
live.
Oh man, holy moly. Oh, that's surreal. Hi everyone. Oh man. Ah, so excited to be here. So good to see all of you. Okay. So, should we just go ahead and get right into it? Yeah, let me see here. So I have, yeah, I see some questions coming in.
Perfect.
I'm gonna show my share my screen real quick. So we have currently we have a sort of a Drost thing going. And so I just wanted to, while we're waiting for some more stuff to come in, I just wanted to sort of idle on this buffer here.
If you increase your font size slightly, that might be even nicer.
Yes, absolutely. Gladly. Whoa, okay. There we go.
Right, the first question was, looking for examples of files in book club style. The person says, that seems to be related to what I've been doing, but coming from different influences.
Yes. So I included let me see, I'm just looking at the IRC here and smiling at all the people. So I provided a link. So I think that an excellent so I have gone ahead and provided the link to the repo, and I'm going to go ahead and post that again. So this should serve as a full example of what a just sort of standard book club file looks like. And if anyone has like specific questions about anything in particular, they would love to see my sort of like walkthrough and narrate like specifically, any place in this file that they would like to see me sort of like go over live, I would be super happy to do that. So I have the whole more or less complete book club file for Squint pulled up here. I have I have my vision laid out, which has my initial sort of goal. The background and the vision sort of combine to lay out what my general sort of goal is. Wait, I just realized, let me kill my stream there. There we go. Savings.
All right. There's another question. The product of a TAPA like squint.org would be pure gold for an agent like Claude Code. Have you experimented with providing an agent with a final output and letting it chew through to-dos?
That would be a really excellent question. I actually just kind of recently got into Claude in particular. I'd played quite a bit with GPT and a lot of 8 billion parameter local models, and I was never super impressed. It always felt like I was, just sort of wrangling to get it on the same page, whether as a result of sycophantism or really just not having enough parameters in order to understand the context of what's going on. Claude has completely changed my perception of what an LLM can do or not. It makes autonomy not seem like a total fever dream. I have definitely been curious about how an LLM would react to book club files. I think that, yeah, especially like I've been daydreaming a little bit about having it generate scratch artifacts or suggesting different changes to the format. It's like, yeah, the fact that this is all like, you know, like super, you know, the goal and the hope for all of this is that we're being verbose about our thinking anyway. This is, you know, sort of by how by default, you know, deep reasoning kind of works. I actually think that I totally agree. It would be a great fit. I have yet to personally do it because I've always been just a little bit weary about like, you know, well, if I'm writing a program, I want to write it. You know, it's people often talk about like, you know, oh, I just want to hand off the boring parts to Claude. But the thing is if I'm writing eLisp, I find the whole thing to be kind of fun. Would be super interested in, you know, just sort of as a point of exercise, like seeing what it's capable of. Because I really do think that this would be kind of an ideal environment. It is kind of close to, you know, native-ish how LLMs think. There's also, like, you know, of course, the privacy angle. I don't necessarily want to provide it a whole bunch of code verbatim that I intend to GPL3. But I believe that Claude kind of has a better policy in terms of what does and does not become training data. I'll have to look into Claude in particular because I feel like that would be my target for it. But I think that's definitely onto something. I've definitely thought about this. I've definitely been really curious about this.
Next question. Do you think every TAPA should have its own book club file as well, or would you rather keep just one book club file in the top of the project?
So I think that I definitely would advise that each TAPA have its own book club file. And the reason being is because I find that for me personally, the way that my brain kind of works is that out of sight, out of mind is very literal for me. I just saw that I got an email and I'm like, yay, okay, cool.
Case in point, right? But, we were at, case in point, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely quite ADHD. And it works for my advantage because it provides all sorts of versatility. This is another great advantage of book club. If you have an ADHD mind like I do, where, you know, you love jumping around and working on all sorts of different pieces simultaneously, you don't like sitting down and doing the same thing all day unless it really latches onto you. You know, you can pivot and you don't do anything. It really rewards the fact that you can pivot. So I find that to be really excellent. But to go back to the original question, I would definitely recommend, at least in my circumstance, I find it to be incredibly useful to have each TAPA be its own book club file rather than to have a unified file that holds all of your TAPAs. You can definitely do this, especially if you're using org to organize it hierarchically. It's just sort of a matter of preference and style at that point. So long as you're making a clear distinction between your TAPAs, that's the main thing that I would recommend no matter what, because the whole hope that I have is that you have a sort of separation of focus between the different, you know, the different focuses of your different TAPAs. They really should ideally feel like different programs so that you're not, you know, getting over yourself, getting ahead of yourself. I think that, you know, on that basis, I would probably default to recommending that different TAPAs have their own separate book club files, because ideally they should kind of be different, sort of independent but related thoughts. But at the same time, I mean, like, you know, this is coming from someone who, like, has a billion small, or, like, you know, I had one giant org file for a long time, and then realized that really didn't work for me. So now I have a billion tiny ones. So depending upon how you feel about, you know, should I have one really big org file or a bunch of really little org files? I feel like that more or less gives your answer. I think it's whatever works best for you. I know that far and away what works best for me is having separate files. No matter what, you should have separation of concept though. But however you do that is, you know, is best your judgment call.
Next question, how do you build habits when it comes to documentation? I tend to produce lots of documentation in one go, then effectively forget to do it for long periods of time and end up playing catch up, which results in a loss of precision, as you alluded to in your talk. In a work setting, when something goes on fire or priorities change, it can be hard to keep discipline. Would love your thoughts. Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. So what I tend to do is so far what I've been doing is that I haven't been making a conscious priority of writing documentation at all. And if that sounds contradictory to the talk, that is correct. What I mean by this is that when I'm writing code, when I'm writing, you know, drafts of my functions, the way that I tend to approach this, the way that I really emphasize the approach for it, is that I want to focus first and foremost on sort of like just writing down what my internal monologue is for what I'm doing for that pass working on the function. So my existence of documentation is ultimately an immunity from the fact that I am writing what I'm doing as I'm doing it. And it's more or less just, I'm just mashing out the stream of consciousness of what's going on inside my head as it's happening. So if we go down and we take a look at, yeah, so let's go ahead and take a look back at the macro. Yeah, really, this is kind of cheating because, you know, mostly I would consider this to be self-documenting, but we all kind of know that in of itself is a slippery slope. That's not great. Because it's like, I could believe that this would be self-documenting if this was a three-liner. It is not. Which, you know, also goes to show me that this needs to be splitting into its own tapas. I intend to, you know, write a tapa that's a sort of... That's a sort of like macro builder that automatically, you know, does the gensims for you. Something along the lines of what's the common Lisp macro for that called? It's like there's some common Lisp faculty that does automatic gensim binding. I can't quite remember what it's called. A prior version of this talk had my live coding that, but that ended up sort of distracting from what I kind of wanted to nail out and focus on. But really kind of what I do is that, yeah, let me see here if I can find some sort of, so I have in my research section sort of lay out like what the quirks of all this sort of are. I think my development focuses contain a little bit of what could be ultimately considered to be documentation. As I'm looking through all of this, I'm kind of realizing that, like, you know, yeah, there's stuff that are into documentation here, but it's all a little ad hoc. You know, I would, in part, the design of this particular tapa is arguably not currently, but is going to be simple enough such that a doc string is sufficient for documentation. That is not the case currently.
All right, next question is, how do you write examples and tests? hang on a second, there we go. Yes, I think that you mentioned that during the talk, but I couldn't find them on a very quick look at your org file in the Squint repo.
Yes, so my use of the word test was a little bit creative, but that is my test validation of the code that I've written. I more or less tend to do I tend to try and write really small functions and have really aggressive validation by just making sure that, like, you know, when I chain functions in the REPL, they each step of them produces results that are, you know, really quite immediately and self-verifiably sane. Now, this isn't a great excuse to not use a test suite, but it's gotten me pretty far. What I mean by tests is that in the research sections, what I've done is, so I've created a sort of test in the sense that I have created a really highly representative case of the way that the program ultimately ought to behave. And doing so, I created a sort of embedded domain language that I have termed Animal Houses. And Animal Houses is a sort of markup language that is, it has rather simple rules. This here is the entirety of the spec for Animal Houses, you know, not a nice grammar or anything, but like it is more or less breadth of everything that needs to be known about how Animal Houses works. And I've created Animal Houses because it is an ideal and incredibly simple circumstance for how to go about as needed tests for how Squint ultimately ought to work in practice. So when I'm doing research, what I do is I take the text of Animal Houses and I will go ahead and insert it into a buffer. And, you know, I'll just create an ad hoc buffer. I just called it a woo. And then what I'll do is in my research sections, I will write, I'll write like step-by-step like instructions on how to go about with a REPL-driven definition using Animal Houses. So it does Squint pass label to width restriction correctly? Yeah, the tests conducted here indicate that it does not. And then I link to a development focus that effectively acts as my bug report, or sorry, my my bug for my bug listing for this particular problem that I've identified. I lay out some criteria of how to go about using the REPL to, I identify what I believe is sort of like a quarantined area that I found for the bug. And then the test is that I will go about engaging with narration the step-by-step of how I produce the circumstances around the bug until I ultimately narrow all the way in and arrive at a conclusion.
Something's going on with the screen share. I can see your screen, but the server cannot see your screen updating. Sorry.
Oh, weird. Oh no.
Can maybe you stop? And then we just redo it again. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks to someone who noticed the buffer time, the time in the mode line was not updating. Okay, let's try that again. Now okay. It's short. It's updating. So let's,
Gotcha. I hope that wasn't going on for too long. Hopefully right. What I was saying wasn't, completely indecipherable. It's just, let me see here. This is the sample text for Animal Houses. This is the spec, not a formal grammar, but it is more or less the whole of the spec that you need to write a parser for Animal Houses. Most of the tests around Squint involve writing sort of ad hoc parsers for Animal Houses, just when I have it in its own buffer. I find more or less it's an excellent way of going about testing in an ad hoc sort of REPL-driven manner. That I, just sort of write regular that pull out the pieces of the sections of buffer that represent, the different fields and data types in association with the animals and the houses to which they belong. And then when I am engaging in research, you know, what my research section is I'm ultimately just sort of like laying out, like, you know, I'm sort of thinking to myself, is this working right? I feel like there's something here, something in this area. And I'll, you know, ask myself, well, kind of like, what is it? You know, what am I looking for? And then nail down, how am I going to go about looking for it? And the process of working with the REPL to sort of pin down, like, what exactly is going on and come to a conclusion on. Completely jumping out of order. Have you experimenting like whisper.el for doing speech to text as you think out loud into your book club? Well, now I am. I love that idea. That is awesome.
I love that. Even with, I only have a CPU, no GPU on mine. It does capture things a lot faster. And because it actually saves the recording to a WAV, or I guess you can configure it, in case it doesn't recognize something well, you can go back and check it. So that's nice. I like that more than the straight, you know, speech text thing. And I've been mulling over the idea of having a keystroke save into a background buffer so that even when I'm looking at something else, I can dictate into my equivalent of the book club file.
Yes, absolutely. So you can be scrolling through documentation on, like, you can be scrolling through documentation on one screen, and you can be musing to yourself about, like, you know, is this supposed to work this way? Like, you know, like, what in terms of, like, you know, like, I see this function, it sounds like it's what I'm looking for. I don't know if the types are quite right. Like, I don't understand. It's named what I'm looking for, but I don't know what it's taking in. You can, like, reason through all of this. You're not even writing into the buffer that you're working with. But that's actually so cool.
Or you can tie it into the org capture process so that it can pick up an annotation automatically. Annotation is the link to the thing, whatever you're looking at.
Oh, that's super cool. Yes. No, I actually really love it. I haven't, like, you know, hooking this all up to org capture at all. I actually really love that idea in of itself.
Yeah, Org Capture will give you a lot of capture options. Like, you can capture to your currently clocked in heading.
That'll do it.
So then it just files your note in the right place automatically.
Absolutely. I love that. Let me see. I'm actually, like, writing a note to try that out. I'm definitely going to have to do that. Like, the flexibility of that in particular sounds just perfect.
Let you finish typing noises, and then we can ask the next question, for which there is one. The question is, what is the largest project in terms of team size you had the chance to consult and introduce the book club Tapas concept? And what has been your experiences with these setups, implying larger applications or solutions that company is working on?
So, yeah, probably the largest application. So I have, it's been interesting. So in regards to this, the largest, I would say, two people in a couple different circumstances. So it's the pair of us working in a startup context. And then, you know, we both have, like, rather technical backgrounds. We can both more or less, you know, sort of reason about it. It's been particularly exciting. Especially as we've been building up Tapas, is that, you know, well, we're both rather technical people. You know, I'm definitely software engineering sort of end. And, you know, this partner is more, I mean, he's done all sorts of different engineering, but none of it in a, like, especially software context. So, like, you know, but What's been really cool about that is that especially as we've built up Tapas and made clear distinctions about what they ought to do, you know, he doesn't have a ton of, like, really, he doesn't, like, experience, like, specifically in software engineering, but because we have it all laid out in this really flexible way, he's able to pick up the ball and, like, you know, like, he's able to take the ball and run with it because it's all laid out in a way that's so intuitive. Like, you know, he's able to, like, collaborate with me and, like, you know, like, you know, run off these ideas and, like, really go for it, like, you know, almost as quickly as I can, just because we've set up a structure where, like, all of the different pieces have these really intuitive and intrinsic and straightforward roles. And that's something that's really exciting in of itself that I didn't really go over in the talk. Like, a managerial perspective, this is actually a really excellent way of understanding the whole context of, like, what the software stack looks like. Because it's like, you know, it makes it more intuitive for developers, for sure, but it makes it more intuitive for everyone. You know, it's on that basis that I can't imagine clients, like, just a better way at this point. That was the other circumstance where I have been working with a partner. This has been with, you know, I would be, you know, sort of going back and forth with someone who had hired me to work on contract. And I would use this to sort of go over with them about, you know, sort of get, like, a solid idea of like, you know, scope and function, do, like, pre-planning, you know, as we're going into more specifics on, you know, what the overall for the project and how it ought to look and how it all ought to be laid out. So there's a lot of really exciting flexibility there that I think is really cool.
People will, of course, be curious about the mechanics of that collaboration. Did you get other people using Emacs and org? Were you using version control? Did you try out CRDT? How did it work?
So all of this so far has been over screen share, where I would be stepping through the buffer by hand. I would love to set up some sort of an environment where, like, I could get you know, clients and partners, like, you know, really excited about using Emacs and org, but, you know, it's, it can be a little bit to ask. I would love to see if I can, like, put together some sort of a config that, like, sands off all of this and, you know, makes this really, like safety proof sort of intuitive environment just for, CRDT in particular. I love the idea of, like, you know, sort of like spawning CRDT so that, like, you know, the two of us can, type spec and ideas and sort of, like, draft together on, you know, especially like the glue code Tapa for a larger software stack, like collaborating on that over CRDT or having folks step through Tapas and, you know, unfold them and, like, you know, point to a particular thing. And it's like, you know, like, what's this? What's the clock here? It looks like we're spending a lot of time, and I would like to get a little bit clearer of an idea of, like, what exactly we're doing here. Yeah.
Back up a little bit because the stream just disconnected and reconnected from the audio. So please repeat just your last sentence.
No worries. Yeah, for sure. So I would like, you know, I love the idea of collaborating on, especially, like, on the glue code Tapa for a particular software stack, you know, having the both of us use CRDT to type into it simultaneously. I think that would be super cool. I also really love the idea of, you know, having client or partner, thumb through individual Tapas in the stack and then, like, you know, like, look at use and be like, well, we seem to have time on this recently. Can you give me, like, some clarification on, like, you know, what this part is and how it's, you know, what it means for the whole and sort of like what, you know, what it represents in terms of how all of this is going to come together. I think that would be super cool. I love the idea of that. I would even consider, like, you know, if not Emacs proper, I would love, like, you know, maybe a web-based org parser for, you know, even on just a read-only version of the document where, you know, clients and partners, yeah, just sort of thumb through with it and then chat with questions. Make the, you know, screen sharing for, you know, peer programming process just a little bit cleaner, you know, more more intuitive on their end. I think that'd be super cool. I love these ideas.
All right. Theoretically, the Big Blue button is open. I think we've gotten to the end of the questions on the Etherpad. If anyone else would like to join or ask, I'm going to need a couple of minutes and then I can do closing remarks whenever people are ready. So I will mute now when people figure things out.
I would also be super down if, you know, anyone was curious about hearing more about some of the projects that I was kind of rambling at the close of the talk, if people wanted to, you know, hear more about some of my ideas in regards to what am I thinking of? With the what's it called? Yeah, just sort of the you know, some of the funding for passion projects. I would be interested in laying out some of the ideas about how that could work mechanically. And I think that would be, you know, really cool for the whole ecosystem, because I think that there are definitely, you know, things that we could bang out, you know, for getting kind of all sorts of people on that model. I think that it would be really cool to having a, you know, funding model for things that are really worth using and developing. The other thing is, like, you know, just sort of, just rattling off specifics on things that people could potentially vote for on that end in terms of specific might want to work on. Let me see.
All right, there's a question from IRC. Sorry, I just got that. Did you address that one already?
What's the, where is it?
I will copy it from IRC.
Thank you. Gotcha.
Into the pad.
You know, Emma's perfect.
Let me read the question out loud so it's in the recording. I guess a major pro is it has less friction, as people can do a lot, maybe not everything, in BookLab tapas files, versus having to log into gazillions of different systems, each one of them keeping a portion of the information. Did I get that viewing point right from your elaboration of the collaboration between your team, between you and your teammates?
Yes. No, that's absolutely right. Because, like, really my hope is that we can, you know, there's a lot of complaint into that. We assume that a lot of pieces of tooling and the separation between them is really sort of a necessary evil. I think that, you know, having a system where really the complexity of engaging in all of the information relevant to the program, if it's in a format where you can just email it back and forth, break off pieces of it, you know, work with those individually, I think that that's something that's incredibly rewarding. Something that just dawned on me that I wanted to mention that I've been daydreaming about is that in a circumstance where you have multiple developers, like, you know, across a larger team working on a book club tapas driven project. Thing that you can do is have, you know, a clear, you can lay out your goal and then start splitting into tapas from that point, and then assign each teammate their own tapa, which becomes their baby. And I really love the idea of people being able to, you know, have an idea of an interface about how all of these are ultimately come back together, but people have their own like agency over their own code base, despite the fact that they're working in collaboration. I think that it can be incredibly motivating for a team to, you know, have each person in charge of their own project, but of course it's all ultimately going to the same code base. So, you know, I think that that a pursuit of beauty is this really solid motivator in terms of how people, you know, perceive the merits of their efforts and how that lights a fire under them to continue and keep going and dig deep when things get frustrating. When you have a personal stake in your project, I think that that's a really excellent time to really push and move forward on it. And people having ownership over this idea of their specific tapa could be a really cool way to do that in a team setting. But I pivoted off a little bit. So yes, yeah, but I absolutely did that, you know, that having a simplistic format for your information is a really solid way to have collaboration be frictionless. You have one source of information and you don't have to drown in your tooling.
All right, I think you've addressed all the questions on the Etherpad. And as you as you said, people can email you, even though the website looks like it's still not quite there yet, people can email you or add the questions to the Etherpad afterwards. Is there anything else that you'd like to share, or shall I wrap up, introduce myself, doing the closing remarks, and then try to do the closing remarks?
I have two last thoughts. I did just want to confirm that my email is completely working. If you want to keep up to date with me and the stuff that I'm working on, please shoot me, and I will, you know, at your request, I will add you to a mailing list, which will have intermittent updates. You know, I'm not going to send you spam, but it will have updates. For, you know, what I'm working on, what this all looks like, and, you know, sort of, yeah, just context for the different things that I'm working on. My website will be going up soon enough. I just got a little distracted because I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna spin up a Geeks server and I'm gonna make it super cool, when really I just Debian and Apache real quick, just something. So the website will be going up. It's just not up yet. And the very last thing is that I would really like to thank everyone that helped me to, you know, get here. I would like to thank, you know, all of my, you know, I would like to thank my fiance. I would like to thank all of my friends. I would like to thank my, you know, my mentor and business partner, Sharon. I would like to thank Tracy, my therapist. Would like to thank my parents. I invited people to come watch this thing, and I would like to thank all of them. I would like to thank everyone who, you know, was planning on coming to this event anyway. The Emacs community is incredible, incredibly encouraging, incredibly kind, incredibly smart and talented. Y'all make Emacs what it is, and it is so cool. I would like to thank you, Sacha. I would like to thank all of the organizers that made this possible. This thing is the coolest, and this was all so cool.